Got your development box here today. You can navigate to this URL and you can work right along with me. All you have to have is a SharePoint environment and Visual Studio, right? You don't even have to have SharePoint Server. SharePoint Foundation will suffice because service applications are part of the core platform. Later today, if you want to go out there and download the code, you can go and try it at home, right? But if you want to, you can work right along with me here in the classroom. All right, so this is what this site looks like. If I just jump back to the beginning here. This is the third part of a three-part series. If you missed the first two parts, you're not too late. I went ahead and got those, put them up where you could download them. So if you go to my blog and type SPC, it's not a published link or anything, but if you go there, you'll see these three links. If you go to part number one, there's the video that I did at TechEd last year talking about the concepts, the general concepts of service applications, all right? And then if you go to the second link there, that's the talk that I did last year at the SharePoint conference, where I implemented the basic service application, the hello world, if you will. Yes, and it took us all 75 minutes, no problem. That one, I actually did not have my laptop plugged in, and I had to move from one room to another the last 5 minutes before we took off. So the first 10 minutes are a little bit rough, but go ahead and watch through that video. That'll teach you how to do the basics based on the concepts that I covered at TechEd. So what's this session? This is session number three. Once you've got a Hello World service application, how do you take it to the next level? How do you extend that beyond what we've got? So today I'm going to cover six different points, presuming I have enough time in 75 minutes, right? In order to cover things like, well, first, let's just do a quick review of the basic service application. Make sure you understand how my Visual Studio project's laid out. Then we're going to talk about how to consume that in various ways. Today we're working with a lot of JavaScript libraries, and they don't like to necessarily call into WCF services, and I've got a little workaround for you that might really catch your eye. We'll then talk about how you go ahead and build a user interface so that you can new up that service application in central administration, right? Then we'll talk about the idea that we might want to have a database behind our application. We might want to make it so that we can actually store our information in a SQL Server database that gets automatically backed up and restored using the SharePoint backup and restore facilities. Getting at your data from a non-HTTP context can be challenging, so I'll show you how you can create a timer job that will go right along with your service application and work with the actual WCF methods that you'll implement. And then finally, I don't think we'll have time, but we'll get to the manage and properties pages within central administration. You can go and get these anytime you'd like, and actually there's three more coming. So let me go ahead and jump to my slides real quick here. That's, what is it, number one? There we go. So this is the advanced custom SharePoint service application development talk. Wow, that's a mouthful. You can get a hold of me at todd@mindsharp.com, T-O-D-D, because I'm more than 30 years old, right? So todd@mindsharp.com if you need to ask some questions to follow up, whatever. I do have a hashtag up there, but I don't tweet very much. So if you want to follow me, I probably tweet maybe three times a year, something like that. No, three times a week. Maybe that's a little bit better. All right, so how come I can't click on that, guys? Oh, I got a little clicker here. That'll work. So there's the concepts that I covered in the TechEd talk I'm just going to quickly review. How many of you have built service applications before? I'll just holler it out. Looks like about half of you have. About half of you have built service applications before. If you have, I call this the Furious Five or the Fabulous Five or whatever you want to call it, right? These are the five things that you need to fully understand completely through and through in order to understand how service applications are going to expose your service. Right, the capabilities that you want to make available to other farms or to any kind of client that you'd like to make it available to. The service basically just registers that you have a service that you want SharePoint to know about. The service instance says which servers your service is running on. If you've ever been in central administration and you clicked on services on server and you said start, you were creating a service instance. That's what those are. Then we got service applications. Service applications are the core. That's what actually does the work. Now, you can either implement your work directly in the service application or have it surface a WCF service, your choice, which way you want to do it. A service proxy, once again, just basically says, hey, SharePoint, I have a proxy that I want somebody to be able to come in and get access to my service application. So it's a registration kind of a thing. And then finally, we've got a service application proxy. That's what your client is going to talk to. The service application proxy talks to the underlying service application, which talks to WCF, which talks to whatever you want it to, right? Which is WCF service. So it's a proxy of a proxy of a proxy. I'm not kidding. It's that over-architected, okay? So that's what I talked about. You can go listen to 75 minutes of that conversation. I talk about why you want to do it, the history of why we get there, why I call it COM plus minus, right? It's everything we had in COM plus minus a few things and some other heady kinds of things. But the general video at TechEd covered that in depth. Made sure you understood every aspect of that, including what you might want to do in order to get started, right? Then last year at SharePoint Conference, I covered this. I covered that in the terminology and concepts. I just kind of overviewed that right now. If you look up there, you can kind of see on this chart. I know it's a little bit busy, but on the right hand side, you can see, or is it on the left? On the left hand side, you can see the service. The service keeps track of what's all going on, right? It knows which instances have been started or stopped on the various servers in your farm, and it basically makes the service application available through the service application proxy, right? The service proxy registers that you've got one. The service application proxy is how we talk to it. And then on the far right-hand side over there, we come through the service application proxy group. What the heck is that, right? When a web application gets created, you say, these are the services that I have available to me. And you identify the specific service application proxy that you're going to talk to, right? You don't see it listed there on the screen like that, but that's effectively what it's choosing is the service application proxy there, okay? If you've been in central administration, you've seen the default proxy group. We want to make sure we register with the default proxy group so that we're either checked or unchecked when we first get started. And then they can customize that and choose whether or not they want to include your service in that group, right? You guys all seen that? Maybe? Yeah. Maybe not. I'll pull it up in a minute here when we get back to the VMs. All right, then last year, I talked about the concept of building one of these monstrosities, right? There's at least a dozen classes that you need to create in order to make one of these things hum along. So we went through the custom service application fundamentals. That is, first you gotta start by building a WCF service. So that's where we'll get started. I'll pull up a Visual Studio project and we'll take a quick look through the simplest one I could create, get server time, okay? We won't stay there, but that's what we build first. We want to test that WCF service and make sure it does what we want it to do. Once you've got the WCF service, then you're going to create the Fabulous Five. You say, hey, service and service proxy are the two bottom ones. Then we got service instance, service application, and service application proxy. Okay, so those five get created. I like to go ahead and create a utility class that lets me put some common functions in, but also to identify the name of my service in one and only one place so that I refer to that everywhere. If I ever want to change the name of it, I change it in one spot and it gets updated everywhere. Okay, so we'll see that. You'll want to create a farm feature to create and destroy the three things that always have to be there. So every time a service gets created, a service application gets put out onto your farm, you have to have one service, register your service, right? So you have to say, hey, farm, I have a service. Secondly, you have to make a service instance that can be started on every server. So every server gets one service instance. And finally, you need a service proxy, one per farm again, right? To say, hey, I have one of these. In the configuration database, those service and service proxies get created. Then, as a developer, I recommend you create a little PowerShell script that will be your IT pro slave from that point on. And that PowerShell script is, I call it post-deploy. And after it deploys, then it goes out and it makes sure that your service instance gets started. It makes sure that you get a service application created and that a service application proxy is created. And your proxy is added to the default service application proxy group. Okay, so all of those things get automatically done for me via a PowerShell script, so I don't have to go into central administration every time I deploy and restart my service and recreate my application and so forth and so on. Make sense? Okay, so that's sort of the beginnings of how this all works. When you start a service and you create a service application, both have to be done. They don't have to be done in that order. You can create a service application and then start your service instance, however you want to do it. Either way, once you've done both of those things, then a new web service will get created in a special place in IIS with a GUID that says that's your service. Okay, so that's that last guy there. And then finally, you want to make sure you create some kind of a test client. We can just use PowerShell to begin with, but then we're going to want to get more and more advanced kinds of clients. Make sense? All right, so when I first started looking at this, I thought, hey, I'll just go ahead and cover all of the things that that we might be able to do in a service application in part number three here. And I just don't think I'm going to be able to get it all done in 75 minutes. I can talk pretty quick, wow, there's just so much code, you know? So I'm going to do a quick review of just the simplest one I could possibly create, the get server time. Now, how many of you saw that at last year's SharePoint conference, the get server time? So maybe 5% of you. So this won't be a waste of our time. So I'm going to go ahead and flip over. And the way that I've orchestrated this is I made it so that if you click on the first one, you're going to get a zip file that you can unzip into your Visual Studio projects directory, and that will be your first service application. You go ahead and set the URL, deploy it out, test it all out how you want, and then when you're done, retract it and go get the next zip. It's the same service application, just with the next stuff in it, because I didn't want to go cut and paste of all of the code bits. That was just going to take too long. So this was my solution. I've already taken all of these, unzipped them all into my Visual Studio Projects library here, so I've got six or seven, actually, different service applications, 0 through 6, right? We're going to start out with the 0th one, and we're going to move forward through there. So this is the baseline, right? This is hello world, if you will. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the Who Is Online is the name of my service application. And when you get my bits, you're going to open it up, and guess what? First thing it's going to say is, what do you need? You have to say, this is my URL. This is where I'm going to test, right? Because my user and your user don't equate, right? So you're not going to have the SharePoint site to test on listed there. So it gives me an error right away. Oh, did it open it up? Let me try it again. There it goes. So if you saw down in the error list down there, it basically said, I didn't have a site URL. The site URL is what tells Visual Studio where we're going to deploy this so we can test it all out. Everything we're doing is a farm solution. Everything is farm. Absolutely every bit of it, right? And so there isn't any you can use any site collection you want. Any site collection will work. You just have to fill in the URL. Mine is called http://sp. SP for SharePoint, right? By the way, this is a SharePoint 2013 box, but everything I wrote will work on SharePoint 2010. So I left them with an equality. There are a couple of methods that have been deprecated, and you'll see them squiggled out, but they'll work in 2010 and 2013. It just gave you the ability to version your config files now. And so they want you to use the new, you know, get versioned config files rather than the old just get config files. You'll see it in a minute. Okay. So this is my service application. I kind of want to run you through what I got in here, okay? I'm going to start out with the web service right in the center here. I always like to put my code underneath of one common name. So everything that I do in the SharePoint root has my project's name as a qualifier. That way I know I won't have conflicts with anyone else. The names that you should use should always be something that would make you unique on the internet. A good suggestion would be the name of your company or your project or product, right? The technology you're working with, and then the purpose of that particular library. In this case, I'm calling mine mindsharp.serviceapplications.whoisonline. Note that I've got several different classes in there. The first one is an interface. So if you've worked with WCF, you know that you first have to define operation and data contracts. Right, so you have to define the contract, the address, binding, and contract. That's what's in the interface file there. Let me go ahead and open that up so you can kind of see what that looks like. Can you guys read that in the back? Is that big enough font? Yeah? Okay. So I've started with a very simple service contract. It just says I've got an operation called getServiceTime. Inside of a class called the service application, I've implemented getServiceTime to actually get the time. And then I surface that through the service application proxy. Remember, service application proxy is what your client talks to. It talks to the service application, and the service application talks to WCF. Proxy of a proxy of a proxy. So this one says, go ahead and channel a request for get server time to that backend system so that it can go ahead and respond to that. There's a whole bunch of little helper methods down at the bottom down here that you really don't have to understand. It's execute on channel and stuff like that. It's WCF stuff to basically say, take this request and pass it on through using the appropriate mechanisms to get it there. Now, I did create a service factory, a service host factory. The reason I created one of those, and you can see it in the SVC file itself. So in the SVC file, I'm just using service and factory. The only reason to create a factory here is because you want to support claims-based authentication, right? And it isn't by default. It's just Active Directory, right? So we're going to go ahead and create a factory. I'm using replaceable parameters to refer to all of my classes by their class ID. It's a great way to go. So each one of these classes has a GUID on top of it. It has to be a lowercase GUID. Don't miss that. If you have even one capital letter, it won't work. Okay, lowercase GUID. You decorate your class with a GUID, and then you can refer to it using its class ID. Now, you always get a class ID. You just don't usually see it. Every time you compile, you get a new one. So if I put one on top of the class, then I know I can refer to it using that ID. So that I've done that on all of my classes. I highly recommend that you do that as well. In fact, there are some parts of it that just won't work if you don't. So every time you create a class, go ahead and decorate it with a class ID. In here, you can see that I have my service host factory, which basically says I'm going to allow claims-based authentication, which Active Directory is claims aware, so we're good to go. The last thing that I've got is a web.config config. This is the madness of WCF. So I don't know what to tell you other than lots of stupid looking stuff that you've seen over and over again, right? All of the defaults that are in here can be tweaked. I think that's why they tell you. But you can delete about half of them. If you delete them out, you'll get the default value that's in there. So you can sort of simplify this if you'd like. But most of the time, you just generate this with the WCF, that little tool, right, in the Visual Studio tools. Okay, so that's my WCF service. I went ahead and tested that with the WCF test client, make sure that it all did what it was supposed to do. I'm not going to take the time to do that right now. Then I created the Fabulous Five down here, right? So the first thing I created was the service. What does the service have? Well, every one of these five classes, all five of these classes, are going to implement a given underlying base class. They're going to have a couple of constructors. You always have to have a constructor that has the base constructor, right? Because these classes are going to get serialized and stored away and then rehydrated. So they have to have a constructor with no parameters at all. Then you can see I got some constructors. Type name, sadly, is what they use to display this in the central administrative interface. Type name. Not display name, not description, type name. So you have to sort of smash that up and say, hey, I'm going to go ahead and use something that looks nice. Otherwise, yours is going to look like a techie wrote it in central administration, all right? So this service name is what I was telling you about. In the utility class, I went ahead and I created a service name that I'll use everywhere I would refer to the name of my thing. That means that you can do a big refactor of this by changing everything that says the service in all the files to whatever you want your service to be called. I usually just leave it called the service because it's always qualified by whatever your namespace is. So as long as your namespace is unique, you can call it the service all day long. And the only words that are going to show in the interface are those. Does that make sense to you? There's one big refactor you can do, change all in all files to whatever you want the service to be, right? But there's an underlying post-deploy that you need to change as well. So at the very top of post-deploy, because this is just a text file that's going to get run, after the deployment is finished, you have to change it there as well. So it's changed in two places. That's the only two places you have to change the words that you will see displayed in the interface. Okay, make sense? I really spent quite a bit of time just trying to make sure I could refactor this to name it whatever I wanted it to be called. Because that was really frustrating when I first started working with these. I was like, oh, I got to go do that again? Generate another 19 classes and name them all and put GUIDs on all of them and blah, 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 right? You get the idea. All right. So here's the service. We also have a service application. You can see it's got constructors and the same kinds of things, right? Service application proxy, constructors. It's got the GUID on the top and so forth. Same thing for service instance and service proxy. Now, there is one thing that I did that I wouldn't normally have done, but I don't tell anybody. I reflected, some of the out-of-the-box stuff. One of my friends did. I talked to them. And it turns out that this is the way that most of the underlying product classes are written as well. The service application has a create method that is not part of the interface. It's just a public static one that says, hey, look, I don't have to have an instance of this object in order to call this method. Why? Because the methods that they give us for creating an application and for creating an application proxy don't have the parameters we need to create them. So we made our own. We created a create method in the service application and the service application proxy. Okay. The last thing that I'll just mention down is the actual packaging of the client. You have to have some kind of client config. Again, it looks WCFE. I'm simply specifying an HTTP endpoint. If you wanted to, you could do an HTTPS, or you could even create your own WCF service inside of SharePoint with a MEX endpoint, and then have your service application just surface that. The reason I don't typically do that is because the service application framework itself will deploy your WCF service wherever it needs to go. Let me show you what I mean. So I've got a feature in here, a farm feature. It's got a feature receiver in it. The feature receiver is going to make sure that I get those three things I talked about. So I know there's lots of code in here. I don't know how to simplify this more than just talk about what's there. Make sure you understand the general pieces of this code so you can go back home and go, oh, I remember talking about that and that and that, right? Okay, so what does this code do? It just does three things, really. It makes sure that I have a service. So it establishes that I have a service. It establishes that I have a service instance for every one of my servers. And then it makes sure that I have a service proxy. Remember, the service registers with SharePoint that you have something. The service instance says whether it started or not. And the service proxy says that I have something that my client can talk to. Those three things are sort of just underpinning things that have to be there for your service to do anything. If you don't have those three pieces, then your service application won't work. Somebody has to go run some PowerShell scripts to create them. So in my opinion, every time you deploy your service application, those three main things have to be there. Now, what you don't have to do is you don't have to include it in the default application proxy group. But if you want your IT pros to see it in central administration, you're going to have to do that as well. So at the very bottom of this, I say, I guess I don't. Actually, I do that now in the create of the service application itself. Sorry about that. So just the three basic things. What do you think I undo in feature deactivating? I get rid of, backwards though, right? I get rid of the service proxy. I go and undo all the service instances, and then I get rid of the service. Right, so you just back it all out, making sure that you're going the opposite direction as you're coming out of this thing. And that's what happens in the feature activated and feature deactivating. So now when I go to deploy this thing, I should see my service out there. Let's just give it a shot. So I'm gonna go ahead and right click on this and say I want to deploy. Now, because I have this post deployment thing, it's gonna go through and it's gonna do lots of stuff, like fail. Yeah, that's wonderful. I think it has my last one in there still. That's what I think is going on there. Let's see. It basically is saying it can't run that DLL. And I think it's because I have an old one in there already. Let me just see. Go to central administration. Nope, that's not it. That's the actual code. How come I can't? Oh, here we go. Central administration got moved. I'm going to try to undeploy it first, actually. Let me do that real quick. This is one of those circumstances where, you know, you tested it so many times that now you can't run it because you've tested it already. Yeah. I'm going to retract it and see if I can just redeploy, and if that doesn't work, then I'll go and fix it. So you see where it says that this happens sometimes. It's very frustrating. Have you guys discovered that web application and farm features are kind of screwed up in Visual Studio? Have you noticed that? Yeah, so I have a farm feature that's not being deactivated properly, and when it goes to redeploy in the iterative deployment of this, that farm feature is not going away. It's not getting deactivated, so therefore all my cleanup code is not happening, and therefore I already have services out there that are messing me up. So in order to fix this, I have to go and get this feature and fix it up. So you just have to do this sometimes. I'm gonna just type SharePoint, go to the management shell. I'm gonna get the SP features. I think that's what I'm supposed to do. Oh, that's nice. By the way, if you're a developer and you don't know PowerShell yet, you need to learn it. It is very powerful, as its name would imply. I'm going to go ahead and find the display name where it starts with, where it's like who. And there isn't one. What is it? Do you want me to deactivate the service application? Sure. SP service application. Yeah, there is one there, but I think it's the feature that's got me messed up. Yeah, I've done that already. Yeah. So the suggestion is in the farm feature to go ahead and say to force. Yes. it set in all the rest of them, but apparently the first one I didn't get that set. So I went into the farm feature and I said, go ahead and force the installation of this thing over and over again. Yeah, it's already installed, but Visual Studio is screwing me up. Thank you for that. All right, so let me go ahead and go to my output window here. And you can see that now it's doing all the stuff that I've asked it to do. It did all the normal SharePoint-y stuff, right? And then I'm having it recycle two things, the timer job service, and I'm having it recycle IIS. Because stuff gets cached in both of those places when you start building advanced things. And it's just easy just to have it in the deployment script to just take care of all that stuff for me. All right, so it's unprovisioning anything that might have been left over out there. You know how it works. You get it all deployed out there, and then some error happens. And so the undeployment can't go. So in my post-deployment script, I just undo everything that might have gotten left over. So, because this is just for me, my developer stuff, right? This is my IT pro slave. So my IT pro slave is going out there doing all the PowerShell-y stuff that I would normally have to do to fix all this up. At the very end, you should see something that looks like this. Who is online has five different components, and they're all online. They're all ready to go. All right? So that means that I should be able to go and see this guy work. If I go to central administration, inside of central administration, there's three places that you're going to want to look. They're fairly easy to go to. You just go to central administration, and on the top left-hand side and on the top right-hand side, we're going to look at three links. The first one is super easy. We're going to go to the farm features, and in the farm feature, we'll see our one farm feature. Our one farm feature, we don't really have to do anything with it, but it is active, which means our service instances, and our service proxy are all created, right? Because that was done in the feature activation. The second place we're going to go is we're going to go look at our service instances. So if I look at the manage services on server, right, I can see all of the servers in my farm, and I can say which things are started on each one of those servers. My service, who is online, is started. Why? Because I ran a PowerShell script that said go start it so that I didn't have to come to this screen and click start every time I deployed. Right? That's what that post deploy is doing. The second thing the post deploy is doing, if I go back to the top of central administration there, come on, I'm going to manage the service applications themselves. So if I go to manage service applications, I'm going to see my who is online down here. I've got both an application and an application proxy. Again, those were done automatically for me. Now, because both the started has happened and I have an application proxy, because both of those things have happened, if I go to IIS and I take a look in there, I'm going to see in this unreachable place with any kind of SharePoint code, you have to use just standard ASP.NET code if you want to get in here. In there, there's a whole bunch of GUID-based applications that got created. Most of those are from SharePoint Foundation itself. If you've got SharePoint Server, you're going to see a whole bunch more. Right? So I need to go find mine in this location. I don't need to, but I'm going to show you real quick. So if I go to the content view, and I start clicking through these GUIDs, I'll look, I'll see Secure Store Service, I'll see App Management, WCF Service is mine. Okay, so this right here, this 56CB, you see that GUID? That's mine. If I stop the service, or if I delete the service application and proxy, then that will go away. It will get unprovisioned, right? The unprovisioning is done for me. So whichever servers I have the service instance started on will get one of those. That way, my client can talk to this application that's been exposed through IIS. So it's really not magic, right? It's them talking through this thing back to those backend classes to do whatever it is we're trying to automate. Okay, so if I go and I stop either one of these things, I'm just going to stop the service because that's the easiest one to start again, right? So I'm going to stop the service over here. Whoops, I picked the wrong one. Let me do that again. Manage services on server. Go ahead and stop my service over here. It says, are you sure you want to do that? I say, yes. It'll say, okay, I'm working on it, and it stopped, which means if I come back to IIS, my 5, 6 CB will be gone when I refresh this guy. No more 5, 6 CB in there. See what I'm saying? However, if I go ahead and I re... Oh, is it in there? Oh, wonderful. Yeah, what are you going to do? Oh, what in the heck? Okay. Let me try this. So if I go to my service applications in here, and I delete this guy, go ahead and delete it. Sure you want to delete that? I'm going to delete everything out of here. Now it'll be gone, I hope. It was called 5, 6 EB, right? There it says it successfully deleted it. Let's go take a quick look. So refresh. Oh, yeah, maybe so. The one that I was deploying at first. Let's go down and look and see if there. Oh, well, it'll be gone now, won't it? Okay. That's probably the one that was stuck from the very beginning. All right, thank you for rescuing me. Usually that GUID-based thing will be gone, right? And I've tested it many, many times. That piece of magic does do what it's supposed to do, right? That's what the whole WCF sort of service application framework is all about, is automating the creation of that so that we get access to the rest of the stuff. However, now that I've gone ahead and removed my service application proxy, I want to create a new one. Yeah, you're going to have to go out to PowerShell, right? Because you know, we don't have anything here to create a new one. We'll address that momentarily. First, let's consume this service application, okay? So I'm going to go ahead and go back over to my Visual Studio, and I'm going to retract this one so that it's now out of my, theoretically, it's been all taken care of. I'm going to close out of Visual Studio and go to the second project. In the second project, we have the consumer that I want us to play with. So I'm going to back up one project, come into Who's Online number one, open up that solution. What's the first thing I have to do? Set my site URL, right, so that I can debug against this guy. That's the first thing you'll have to do. You see the error down there at the bottom? It's not an error, really, but I have to do it for two projects this time because I have a web part that I'm going to use to consume this. So I'm going to set it for both of them. This one's already there. Because I'm the same user, that's why. You won't see one. You'll have to set it for both of those projects. You'll have to make sure that they both get that, whatever URL you want. It doesn't matter as long as it's a valid site collection. All right, so let's see what's changed. If I come into my service application here, I still have the same service. So all of those normal classes are there. My Fabulous Five are all still here, but I've added some things. If I come up a little ways, you're going to see that I've added a user control. The user control is going to be placed into the additional page head of every single page. Now, finally, in SharePoint 2010, we got a ubiquitous delegate control that we can put user controls into at runtime. So if you keep your master pages in parity with all of the out-of-the-box master pages, you can become a virus in SharePoint. Right? And that's what I've tried to do here, right? I said, I want my user control to sit at the top of every single page and record that somebody's online. Somebody went and did something. So I want to capture who it was, what page they visited, and what time it was. Right? So I want to keep track of that kind of information. In order to then work with that information, I need to call some WCF services. I need to call some methods. So where do I implement those methods? If I come down to my contract, you'll see that I now have several more methods instead of just get. Oh, I didn't show you the time. Okay, I'll show you that momentarily because it didn't go away. But we can test. We can test calling the time just using PowerShell. Or you can say, give me my service and let me go ahead and call into the get server time. I've implemented several more of these. Now, part of the reason that I organize my project the way I have here is because, let me go up to the right here, these three classes at the very top represent sort of the lion's share of what you have to do in order to get new methods out there. First, I have to set it into the contract, right? Then I have to go ahead and tell the service application that that it's going to implement it with the actual code I'm going to run, right? My actual WCF piece or my hard-coded bit of logic. And then I have to tell my service application proxy to create a channel to it So all three of those places, I have to add those new methods. So let's just see if that happened. If I go into the first one here, my operations are now fivefold. You can see like log current user, get the user count, get the user table, and so forth. Then I go to the service application. If I could do a control MO here to just sort of smash that up, control MO, there we go. You can see I've got log current user info, get the user count, and so forth. And you can see I'm working with an in-memory data table to sort of keep track of all of this. Now, this is one of those service applications that's a little different than other ones to keep it simple, right? The idea is that I would implement this on a single server as a centralized place to maintain state. As opposed to the other reason you'd create a service application is to offload processing, right? So I can say this set of servers is dedicated to handling this very heavy processing load I don't want to have on my web front end. Right, those are the two biggest reasons why you might create a service application. So I'm centralizing state into this in-memory data table so that all my servers, I could have a dozen web front ends and they could all talk to this one server, and that one server is going to keep track in memory of all of the users that are logging in and what they're doing and what their last page was that they visited. Does that make sense to everybody? Yeah? Okay, so that's what these five methods do. And then, of course, I have to create a channel inside of the service application proxy for each one of them. So if I come and smash up this, you'll see that I've got the log current user info here as well, but it's exposed via the execute on channel. So three places where you have to update every time you want to add another method. Not too difficult because they're organized in an easy and well-defined place. Okay, so I now have five methods instead of one. So I can do more than just getting the server time. My service didn't change, really. It's just the same as it was before. My service factory didn't change, and neither did my web.config. In order for me to call into this, though, I wanted to go ahead and create a web part. However, as we do frequently now, I went ahead and got some JavaScript frameworks. I got something called HiCharts, and I got, of course, the jQuery plugins for tabs and stuff like that. And I got some styles from them so that my stuff would look really nice and work well on a tablet and all that kind of thing, right? And so I want to somehow make it so that this interface can talk to my WCF service. The challenge is that it's not necessarily, I guess there's probably a jQuery plugin for calling WCF kinds of things, but we're trying to talk to a service application through an object. JavaScript's not going to want to do that very well. They usually want a URL to something. So here's what I did. I went and I created a layouts page, just a standard old underlying page, right? I said right-click, add an application page. I deleted off the design surface and simplified the entire interface to basically say, look, I've got some code over here. That's all this does. I went ahead and added the GUID to the top of the class that's in the code behind, and I did whatever calls I needed to do directly to my service application. So inside of here, I'm doing go ahead and get the default proxy for a specific kind of service application, and then make whatever calls you need to make in this context. I went ahead and set up some random data so that it's easier to kind of see what this might look like, because how many users are on my dev box? Yeah, so it goes and then it quits. This is what it would normally look like, though, right? You're going to go ahead and get the proxy from the current context, right, because I'm running within SharePoint, so I'm going to say, go get the current context, use it to get a hold of my service application for the specific one that's associated with the web application where I am, right, and then go ahead and call that method that executes on the channel to go through the service application proxy to the service application to the WCF service, right, proxy to a proxy to a proxy. Make sense? So this is what it looks like to call a method if you're in the context of SharePoint. And a little bit later on, I'll talk about what if you're not in the context of SharePoint. How do you get a hold of your service application then? So I've done this for two things, for user count and for the user table, the actual logging of the things that people have done. Again, it's just basically a page that surfaces this code so I can get back some stuff. So if I go to my browser, I got to deploy this first. Oh, I should show you one more thing. The web part itself is a whole bunch of modern sort of JavaScript library stuff, right? So I've got a couple of placeholders, some divs sitting there. Some of them will become tabs, and the other ones will hold chart data and actually will plot on a graph the users that are online, okay? So this is just normal JavaScript kinds of stuff. I did go ahead and say, if the URL has the word random in it, then generalize random content. And if it doesn't have random in it, then just show me the actual content that's in the data table. Okay, so if I want to test my service, I won't go to something that has random in the URL. But if the URL has the word random in it, then it's going to generate random content. That way I can create two different sort of contexts so you can sort of see how it would normally behave and then more like what it's behaving on my box. So I'm going to deploy this service application. It's going to go through that same set of steps, right? If you're an ASP.NET developer, you're very familiar with the four-letter word called wait. Yeah? It's not like getting strong either. So this is going ahead and it's deploying all of those things that we talked about before. So it's recycling the timer service. It's recycling IIS. It's going ahead and removing any of the old baggage that got orphaned from the last time. The farm feature didn't go through its deactivation cycle. And then it's going to go ahead and redeploy all of the stuff. I get my new service application out there. I'm going to go ahead and then deploy my web part down here so we can see what that looks like. The web part will get deployed out, and then I'm going to come over to my SharePoint site. So it turns out that I've got a service account sitting here, and if I go to the home page, I've already put the web part on that page. Since it has the same six-part fully qualified assembly name, right, it should go ahead and find my web part again. At least I'm hoping for that. And I also have a random page that I created so we can see what that looks like. I don't want to take the time to sort of do that in the context of while we're waiting here. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the random page as well. Hopefully this stuff pops in here pretty soon. There we go. So how many users do I have online? Me, because there's no word random. So it says one user, one user, one user, no users, because I set the time to live to 10 seconds. So 10 seconds and nobody's online anymore. Later, I teach this in a class. And I go step by step, and you work through and build it yourself, right? And when you build it, we're going to change the time to live so that you can set it on a property in central administration and say that's how long we say the service will consider somebody online. We're just not going to get to it today. You can see that that's what it looks like. If I click on the user list, I get back that XML that shows me the actual table that's in memory. Now, the actual count is being plotted because I call into a URL once every second from JavaScript. Right? And the XML is being plotted because I clicked on the tab and I went out to that same layout or to the other layout page and pulled back XML. Now, do you see how that works? I'm not trying to call from my JavaScript library directly into my service. That's hard. Instead, I'm just calling a page in layouts that's getting to the service application with ease and bringing back whatever that particular JavaScript library needs. Let me show you, for example, what I mean. One of them is the user count. So if I go to underscore layouts and I look at my user count page, the user count page is that application page that I put in layout, so it's available from every site everywhere, right? And so if I go to that page, you'll see what it looks like. It doesn't look like anything. That's always wonderful, isn't it? Online user count, how about? URL's wrong. I hope. Oh, come on. What did I change? Online user count. It's got to be there. By the way, it will automatically redirect to layouts 15. You don't have to type that. If you're going to a page, it will find it in the appropriate library. Whereas if you're in a JavaScript context and you try to go to the layouts and it's in layouts 15, it'll go, I can't find it, right? But the browser will automatically handle that through the virtual path provider. I don't know why I can't see it. Let's see. I'm going to go just look at this one time. This is my online user count.aspx, right? Where do you see it? Oh, you got it. Yeah, thank you. Who is on? The font is so small. Online. Online user count page. Still get a 404. But it's because I'm typing something wrong. Here? No, it's probably here. Service application. Here, I'm just going to grab this right here because I don't want to type it again. I do have site pages too. Holy cow. Why, you guys got to point stuff out like that. Okay, there we go. I thought it would be like in my browser, you know, like what I typed before, but it wasn't there. That's what's actually coming back from that layout page. You know, that's a much more difficult thing to do in JavaScript. So I like this idea of creating a layouts page that handles all of the server-side code. I know we're not supposed to talk about server-side code, but you can't really do service applications in the cloud, right? That's just not even a starter. You have to do service applications on-premise. And there's a lot of practical applications for doing them, right? But they're not going to let you take your service application and deploy it to Office 365. It's just not going to happen yet. And of course, the other one is just some XML, right? So if I said user online user table instead of count, and do that, I'm going to get, well, it's not obvious that it's XML, but it is XML. Okay? So I'm getting back XML for the particular thing that I've got. In this case, I've got no users. Why? Because 10 seconds has passed, right? So no data came back. All right, so good enough for that. Now, let's go ahead and do something a little bit more complex. So far, we've just sort of scratched the surface with regard to, I've got a hello world thing over here that's got a couple of methods in it, and I'm calling it from a web part. Now let's go ahead and change central administration so that I can allow my IT pro to new up that service application. That's really the core of what you're trying to do. Empower that business user, your IT pro, to create instances, it's an instance of an instance called a proxy. But the actual service application instance is called the service application proxy, and we want them to be able to create those websites underneath of IIS automatically, those GUID-based websites that, you know, choke me up. Yeah, over here, question. Random. Oh, random. You want to see the random one? Yeah, let's look at that. Here we go. There you go. Looks nice, right? So there's my random users. Here's my random user list. It's paginated, all that kind of stuff, right? So I can jump through and see the various users that I have in my context. Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. I meant to do that. How come it's doing that? In IE10, if you go control 1, it does to the next tab. Is that true in IE9 as well? I don't actually know. But yes, random data. And basically all that's doing is I did a set timeout to go and get the point every 1 second, 1,000 milliseconds from that URL. So just bringing back that little bit of data and then plotting it on a high chart. Okay? All right. So we've got the basics of making this thing go. Let's go ahead and start to extend it by adding a new page. So I'm going to go ahead and cancel out of this guy, if I can. Go back to my Visual Studio. I'm going to retract this guy. And that goes quickly, of course, because it doesn't actually do the feature deactivation. Close out of Visual Studio, open up the next one. The next one is for a new page, right? So if I go to number 2, this is to implement a new page. Now, the new page actually turns up in 3 different places with the amount of code we've written so far. I went ahead and skipped, for the purposes of this discussion, the ability to create a new service application using a custom commandlet. But you might want to do that as well so that they can script the creation of these automatically using just a simple custom commandlet. In this case, I'm going to go ahead and just create it with a page. There's 3 places where I actually have to capture the fact that I'm creating a new one from a page, or just the 3 places that I'm creating it from. I'm going to want a new page. The new page is going to show up in central administration so that I can click on the service application management, new, who's online service, and it'll create a service application and a service application proxy. Have we done that yet? Have we created a service application and a service application proxy? Yes, we did in that post-deploy, remember? So if I'm going to change the way that service applications and service application proxies are created, I'm going to want to copy that same kind of format, do the same kind of thing that I did there. Yeah. So I'm going to basically recreate what I did in this post-deployment, but I'm going to do it inside of the code behind of the new page. So I go ahead and I create it's called a global. This is a terrible Visual Studio problem. It's called a global admin page base, and it's actually not available as a template. So you go and you create a layouts page base, which will only put it in layouts. Then you have to pull the page over into the admin folder, so it's in central administration, and tweak the actual class name and namespace so that it matches. Okay, so if you've done a lot of Visual Studio stuff, you know you're constantly truncating namespaces because they want to make them this big, right? So just pull them back so that it's the name of the namespace so it's common everywhere. You don't have to fully qualify stuff. So I'm using this. The second thing that you have to know about the global admin page base is that you have to add a reference to the Microsoft.SharePoint.ApplicationPages.Administration. This is not in the .NET tab. You have to browse out to the ISAPI folder underneath of the SharePoint root in order to pull up this reference. Okay, so you have to actually browse out and get that, because otherwise you're going to be going, oh yeah, I have to have that global admin page thingy, and you won't be able to put it on because you don't have a reference to it, and you'll be like, Todd was mad, that isn't out here. No, it is, you just have to browse to it, okay? All right, so once you've got that, I've created a page, and I went ahead and put some UI on it. Of course, I'm just using standard underlying master page from the dialogue framework. So this will be a dialogue page. And inside of here, I'm using the actual templates to collect two things. I'm going to use an input form text box. By the way, how do you know how to use these controls? Anybody got a guess? What do you do? Yeah, you go look at the other ones and you steal what they did. And you go, oh, look, they're collecting a text box. Oh, I can do that. Hey, look, they're collecting an app pool. Oh, I see. I put that control there and I collect that kind of thing, right? So you just look at some of the other pages and you'll see that these controls are just built for you. You don't have to build this user interface yourself. You just say, I want those controls on my page, okay? And then the code behind is going to take the input form for the actual name of the service application and the application pool thingy that I want to collect. And then I'm going to go to the new page behind here. I'm going to say wire up the OK button, which is automatically on a dialog page, right? When they click on OK, I want to run my code. Then the OK button will go ahead and create those same things that we did inside of a long-running operation. So the long-running operation is going to show them that, what does it say? Working on it, ... right? And so it'll keep showing that until you're done doing whatever code you're going to do. So inside of that long-running operation, I'm going to do two things. I'm going to create a service application, and I'm going to create a service application proxy, right, so that the business user can see them shown up. Now, they start the service separately. They go to that screen, and they say start, right? And so we're not automating that. They have to go say start, and they have to go say new. If they say new, they may not want it started here. They may have started it on some other place, right? So it's up to them to make sure that they're starting it and creating a new instance of that service application proxy. Both of these things always get created, so I'm creating them both, and I'm using that little cheater method that I talked about. I'm literally just calling in to the static method called create inside of each one of those classes. Okay? All right. Now I've got a new page. I want to make it so that I can create my own stuff. So I'm going to deploy this out, and then we'll test it out real quick. So I'm going to go ahead and deploy this out. Now note, I'm not redeploying the web part. The web part's already been deployed, so it's already sitting out there. It's just waiting for me to have another service application. So I'm going to deploy this out so I can see that I have a new page and I can work with that guy. Got to watch for the output guy. Takes a long time. Look at that. It did unprovision that time. Visual Studio is just so inconsistent with whether it actually calls the deactivation or not. So you can see it's provisioning out the pieces that I need. That's because I am building it as a developer, right? I want to do what the IT pro would normally be able to do. Let me show you what it lets me do, though. So now if I come out to my central administration interface and I'm going to do the random one here. And I'm going to do the non-random one beside it. There we go. So those two guys will run in the background to jit everything up. Here's central administration. If I go to my services on server, I'm going to see the same service application, service instance waiting to be started. And it's already started because my PowerShell script did that for me, my post deploy, right? And I already have a new one set out here in manage service applications. So here's my question for you. When I come in here and I can see that I've got one down here and I click on new, how come I can create another one? What would be the purpose of creating a second service application and service application proxy? Say it loud. I've got different groups, okay? Failover? Huh, I hadn't thought about failover. That might be a reason. I usually create it for one of two reasons. One reason, I might want to have one set of configuration for this proxy, and I might want to have a different set of configuration for this proxy. Time to live on this one is a minute. Time to live on this one is 10. Right? And then I have to choose which one I'm going to go for. Here's what's going to happen if I decide I want to create a second one. See this user interface? I didn't do this. Right? I just said, give me those controls, and they auto-generated the name and the application pool. So don't go rebuild this yourself. Use the controls that are there. I'm going to go ahead and call this service application. I lost my mouse. There it is. I'm going to call it the Todd Online. Probably should capitalize O in online. Oh, man. Have you ever been in front of people you can't type? I'm going to go ahead and just use the default, web services default. Click OK. And it's going to go generate a little service application for me. How? It's going to make that service application and service application proxy. Inside of those creates, I'm handling things like the adding to the default proxy group and stuff like that. Let me show you what those look like, actually. So you can see I've got the two down here, Todd Online and Who's Online. The little create methods that we talked about are in the service application. Here's the first one. That create says, go ahead and get me the service that I know will be there, right? Then make up a new the service application using these three pieces, the name, the service, and the application pool, right? Because the service is already there. So here's the name and here's the application pool. Marry all those up and give me a service application, right? And then go ahead and do two things. I want you to update it and provision it. Update, what does that do? Who can tell me? What does update do? Updates it, very good. It saves it into the database. Whenever you see update, that means it's actually committing it to the configuration database. What does provision do then? It actually sticks stuff on the file system and creates websites, and it goes to every server in your farm and rolls it out. It runs a timer job that says, hey, we got it in the database, so it's available everywhere. Where do you want to turn it on? Where do you want to flip this out onto the file system? So update in the database, provision to the file system or IIS or wherever it's got to go. Make sense? So I have to update it and provision it, and then I return back my service application. Same thing for the service application proxy. It's a little bit more complicated, but not too bad. I'm going to go get my service proxy, which I know will be there because when I created my service application, I put it there, right? So I've got my service application proxy. What time do I go till, by the way? Keep going. Well, I think I stop at, what, 1:15? Is that right? Okay, theoretically. I'll probably do this thing at 1:15 where, hey, that's really great. Glad to have you here. And then if you want to stay and hang out and hear me do the rest of it, you can. All right, so I've got the service proxy. I'm going to go ahead and create a service application proxy using the name and the service application URI, right? Update and provision it, and then put it in the default proxy group. What does that do? Well, if I come over here to my central administration, and I take a look again, I got to scroll up a little ways here, and I take a look in my application management, I'm going to see that I can configure the service application associations. In the service application associations, I've got all my service applications, and it tells me which of the proxies that are running, like Who is Online and Todd Online Proxy. What does that mean? Well, that's the default proxy group. That's saying when I'm in this web application, that's the actual one I'm going to talk to. I'm going to talk to that proxy, which is going to talk to the other. So the configuration associated with that proxy is what's going to matter. That way, I can have two different ones if I want. I don't have to have them both on in here, though. I can go and customize this. So if I click on this default proxy group, I can say, oh, where'd it go? It's actually on the service application, isn't it? I can say, I want a custom one. There's only custom and default. That's it. You get one or the other. And I can say, I want this one and not that one. So whenever I'm in this context and I'm talking to my Who's Online, I'm talking to that configuration. I'm talking to that set of data, right? When I remember, I've got an in-memory data table, right? So I'm talking to that data table, not this data table. So it's about data isolation and or configuration isolation. Make sense? Hopefully that makes sense to you. Okay. Actually, I don't want to use the custom one because we're going to turn it on and off and on and off. So I want to go back to, not that, I want to go back to default. But that's what, whenever we're talking about the proxy group, the default proxy group or the custom proxy group, that's what we're talking about. Okay. There, I don't know that for sure, but that sounds great. If that works, I would think that would be awesome. All right, so I've got, I want to show you couple of things. In the actual folder of each of these projects, I have a little PowerShell script called get server time. I meant to do this at the very beginning. I'm going to go ahead and edit this guy in the PowerShell ISE and just run it. If I don't have a service application, it will send back an error saying, hey, you're trying to talk to the service application and you don't have one. So here's what you have to do in order to make this work. You've got to do one of two things. You've either got to get a service context. That means you have to have some kind of a SharePoint site. You guys understand context, right? So you got to get a site so you can get its web application so you know which web application proxy group you're in so you know which proxy to talk to. Does that make sense to everybody? So you got to know what your context is. So I'm going to go ahead and use central administration as my context. So I don't know if you guys can see this very well or not, but I'm basically going and getting the service application proxy where the name is called who is online. That's my service application proxy. And I've got my SharePoint Central Administration. I'm going to grab that website and grab its service context. So I've got my service context. Using that context, I can get my default proxy for that kind of service application, right? So I'm saying this web application knows how to talk to who is online, right? And go get me that one. Go get me that application proxy so that I can call methods on it. So how do I talk to that guy? I go ahead and I get a hold of the proxy. Then I can call get server time or whatever methods I've got. Right, and it does the whole channel thing all the way through the proxy to the proxy to the proxy to the WCF service. Make sense? Question? This is how you would call it without SharePoint. Yeah, because this is like PowerShell. This is sort of this outside of thing. You're going to need to get context. You're going to have to get context somehow. If you follow all the way through all of the projects that I have, there's a timer job that will show you how to get context if you're outside of HTTP entirely, right? If you're on a client computer, you can still get a hold of a site collection. Once you get a hold of a site collection, you know the web application. Once you know the web application, you know what I'm saying? You can... I have not done it with the client object model. So I don't know if you can or not. The way I would do it is I would use the client object model, or actually I would just use a URL to call up to the server and then have the server do it. Just like with the new workflow, if you've got server-side code you want to run, what do? You either put it into a page or you put it in a WCF service, right? So you take all of your custom server-side code, you put it in something that's callable, right? And so that's probably what I would do, and then I would just use the URL to get there. I don't know the answer. Anybody know? Can you call into this framework using client object model? I don't think you can. I don't know the answer to the question. All right, so what did I get here? I got the new page, and I showed you that we could get multiple service applications out of it. The next thing is actually the most complex thing that I'm going to talk about. It'll probably be the thing that I end up ending on. This is a database. So right now I'm doing all of this in memory. What if I actually want to keep a database? What's going to happen to my in-memory data table over time? Right, my server's going to die. Right, so I better do something in order to make it so that I can take what I captured in memory and save it into some kind of a data store. So wouldn't it be great if a service application could generate a database for me that I could interact with, and I don't have to know the connect string or who the person is. I'm just going to say, hey, service application, go and talk to your database. Right? Wouldn't it be cool if that database could be backed up automatically by SharePoint when SharePoint gets backed up? Yeah, that's part of the service application framework. Okay. So... it is the same way the BCS application works, you bet. Or anything with a database, right? So, for instance, the, what is that called? The, where you get the keywords and the terms. How come I can't say that? Yeah, there you go. So, the managed metadata service, right? It has a database in the back end, and so it's backing up that database using the same technique, right? Okay, so let's just I want to make sure that you hear this, and I don't see my peeps anywhere, but if you want, when you leave, you can pick up one of these. It's on one of my last slides. It's a little mouse pad with a Mindsharp guy on it. Where's my person? My person isn't here? Okay, maybe you can't get one. Anyway, They said they would be here. I don't know where they went. They were going to bring a couple hundred of them. So there you go. It's kind of cool. I was on the airplane and somebody said, "What is that?" That's our logo. It's called Harvey. So, okay. Let me show you the actual database itself. Let's see. So if I close out of this guy here and I go and pick up the last one. Now, there are a couple other ones that I did put out there on that page, but I knew I would be rushed in order to get through this content, right? So I'm going to go ahead and go out to my projects again and pick up the next one in line, which is what, 3? Was I in 2? So this is 3? I think it was. Again, I've got to somehow set it up so that I can deploy to this. Now, we're going to touch practically every single part of this entire application with this database call, because everything about it is sort of ingrained in how we're doing service applications, right? So let's just start at the very top. My features doesn't change. I still have a foreign feature. I've got my same admin page, so my new page is still there, but I'm going to have to work with, when I go to create a new service application, now I'm going to have to tell it I have a database. So let's start there, right? So the code behind on the new page is going to have to know how to make database parameters. So I'm going to go ahead and go into the new page. And the UI itself isn't any different. That's basically the same thing, except for I now have a database section. So I'm going to let the user tell me about the database. That's the easiest way, by the way, to get database stuff. Say, hey, IT pro, where's the database? Right? Because otherwise, you're going to have to sort of fabricate it, make it up. There's two other places where I have to reference that I have a new database. That's in my PowerShell script for my sanity, so I don't have to go create the database thingy all the time, right? So I'm going to just, in my post-deploy, I'm going to go ahead and add some database-y-like stuff. Let's see, what did I end up doing? I ended up coming down to my unprovisioning the database, right, in case it got left over and I want to get rid of it. And then down here a little ways, I say, go ahead and get the server where my first content database is. Go ahead and use a database name called whoisonline with a static underscore db slash PowerShell. So if I'm creating it as a part of my iterative development, then I'll know that one was mine. The business user gets to call it whatever they want, right? And we can default it to a name, but they're gonna pick whatever they want. I'm not gonna pass any parameters in, and I'm gonna go ahead and create those parameters, and then whenever I create, remember that's my static create method, I'm gonna call my static create method and not only give it a service application name and an application proxy, but also the database parameters. So I have to change the way my create method works. So I go to the service application, and I change the way that create works to include some database parameters. The database parameters then are passed into the creation of a new service application so that it generates a new database whenever that service application is created. However, that's a whole lot of work. So I stuck down here at the bottom in the database region. I went ahead and showed that we have to first set up a persisted object. Now, you have to decorate it with the word persisted on the actual private variable, which means you can't use the new syntax for declaring a property. You have to use the old traditional syntax, so you've got that private variable to decorate. Once you've got that, then you can say, I want you to persist this. That's all you have to say. And it magically goes, oh, okay, I'll make a string out of that and keep it in the database somewhere, and when you want it, I'll pull it back. So you don't have to actually do the state management. You just have to say, I want it around from session to session, right? So that's pretty slick. So I'm basically saying, look, I've got a persisted value here called the service database. I want you to provision and unprovision it as follows. Well, this is the actual creation of the service application. So it's going to use a little helper tool to create the actual database. The database itself is going to be created from the service database. So I went and created another class called the service database. And inside of the service database, we inherit from an underlying SharePoint database in the administration. So the actual database is going to get created by SharePoint because it knows how to create databases. I'm just going to say, hey, I want one too. And here's my details, right? And so I'm going to tell it the server I want it on and the name of the database and all that kind of stuff I collected way over on that page and send it all the way through to this class. And then this class is actually going to do the actual provisioning of the database. So it's going to go through the process of creating this database, ensuring that the service instance is there and everything, and then it'll go about and create the database. Of course, there's some errors in case it already exists and stuff like that. Who remembers, what does update do? Saves it into the database. So now the configuration database is aware that this database is mine for my service application, and it hooks them all up. So if I say, hey, service application, go talk to your database, it says, hey, configuration database, how do I do that? And it goes through the process of working with sort of a built-in SharePoint database. Follow that? All right, so I have to create my own little class. This is more or less rote. You don't do too much different. This, you basically create this class and dump this code in. Because every time you create a database, it's going to be create a database. So where's the rub? Where's the specifics? How do I say, I want my database to have this table and these columns and these types? Right? Where do I put that? Anybody got an idea? It's three letters. Yeah, there's a mapped folder up here that has the actual subfolder for my project again. I'll get your question in a second. And I put my SQL in here. So it's literally the DDL, the data definition language that you would use in SQL Server Management Studio. So you go generate that, you go, oh, this is what I really wanted to create, and you just hand that over to them. They then empower the whole process of creating the database with whatever name the user said on whatever server the user said, right? Associated with my service application using that structure. Does that make sense, everybody? Okay. Remember, you can take these projects and you can do a diff on them. So you can go, oh, I see what's different between what was in the previous one and what's in this new one. This new one's about databases. So we got lots of stuff in here about how that all works. Let's go ahead and see that this works. I'm going to go right-click on it, deploy it out, and see what it looks like. What should happen, in fact, let me go ahead and pull up the SQL Server Management Studio. What should happen is that there should not be any database here. Well, there's a database there, but what are you going to do? Let's see if I refresh it, does it go away? No, it's still there. Okay, well, when it actually deploys out, it's going to rip it out because it's been orphaned, right? And so it'll rip out the database. That's what's in the post-deploy. And then when it comes back through, the actual framework is going to create that database for me. Then the second part of this one creates a timer job that we can then talk to our service application and say, can you go talk to your database and take this data and stick it in there? And so if you look in the timer job, you're going to see how you can talk to your service application's database without knowing the connect string or anything, right? You're just going to say, hey, database, I want you to do this, and hand it the data, and it takes care of it. And I'm just using Link to SQL for that, right? So standard sort of data access technology capabilities, right, directly from a database that I didn't create, and I don't know the credentials to access. I just am talking to basically the God mode user, the service application that understands how to get a hold of that database. Whatever server the user said to put it on, the IT pro, said put it over here and call it this. Okay, well then that's where it is, right? But it has my structure in it. Does that make sense, everybody? And can you see how beneficial that is? Okay, and yes? The credential is by SharePoint itself. Right, you're saying to SharePoint, I have a SharePoint database that I want you to go ahead and surface for me. So if I come over here and I take a look at my service database class, you're going to see that I am creating a SharePoint database. There it is. Since I'm creating a SharePoint database, it understands, given these database parameters, to go and create it for me and go ahead and access it for me too. Right, using probably the application pool account, although I'm not positive which account they use. But they'll automatically go in and do all the necessary things, do the needful, right? Hopefully this was a great way for you to sort of experience this. I've got some questions. I'll take those in just a moment. Go get these projects and do a diff on them so that you can see, oh, I see, in order to do that next thing, I need these pieces. And these are working service applications. Go find one on the internet. I challenge you, right? Go find one. They're not there. So go grab one of these projects, pull it into any SharePoint environment, open it up in Visual Studio, set the site URL, and deploy it. And you can play around with it. Set a breakpoint. Watch it walk through, right? Take advantage of sort of that process. And if you want to learn how to build this thing step by step, come see me. We're going to do a class first quarter of next year, okay? So take a look at mindsharp.com, and you'll find it out there.